D-Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service, and we are proudly presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you. Cam Ward, the Cam Ward era in Nashville has begun, and we will continue the debate about the Titans reportedly passing on a trade from the New York Giants that, according to Adam Schefter, included, quote, their first round pick this and next year, along with other picks. But first, quickly, there is something that I think all Titans fans can agree on. The coverage of Cam Ward at the NFL draft last night on ESPN was just, to quote Derek Mason, stinky, stinky, stinky. Awful announcing. The headline, ESPN panned for repeatedly ignoring number one pick Cam Ward at the NFL draft, and awful announcing had a couple of posts with the coverage. Now, to be fair, the news of the Jaguars-Browns trade broke in the lead up to the pick, so there was a lot of information there. But then awful announcing posted, along with spending much of the Cam Ward pick announcement talking about the Browns-Jaguars trade, ESPN's Mel Kiper Jr. and Lewis Reddick spent 2 minutes talking about Shedeur Sanders right before the whole football world knew the Titans were taking Cam Ward. That was soon followed by Booger McFarland explaining why he'd take Shedeur Sanders over Cam Ward again, while Ward was viewed as a lock to the Titans.
They sort of conjured up some sort of debate as if the Titans were waiting in the last moment to decide between Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, which was so manufactured. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was manufactured. It was not real. The Titans, and we're going to debate whether this was the right way to go, but they told everybody, they showed their hand to the entire football world, we've got our guy. So there was absolutely no story at the top of the draft. Now, they could have decided to have a really good debate prior to the draft that whether Cam Ward was worthy of the first pick or not. I was looking forward to that discussion. But they jammed in there of, I would go with Shedeur Sanders. Hey, break the tie, Booger. Oh, I would also go with Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders clearly was not going to be the first pick in the draft, but they led with that. That was a slap in the face to Cam Ward and just awful coverage to the point where even Scott Van Pelt, an ESPN guy, started SportsCenter with that same observation that awful announcing had. He said, I've never seen a first pick in the draft get undercovered. They didn't even interview him on the stage, and that wasn't probably planned because the trade did come down the way it did.
I think the NFL just dropped the ball on it. I think they were so...
No, ESPN.
ESPN, not the NFL. ESPN, excuse me. I think they dropped the ball on it. I think they were so
Now, to be clear,
fixed.
This was the ESPN broadcast, right? Because there were multiple broadcasts.
Yes,
so I wasn't watching the ABC...
NFL Network.
Or I wasn't watching the ABC version or the NFL Network version, so I don't know if they gave Cam Ward the proper attention. But a lot of people watched the ESPN version, which was criticized for basically ignoring Cam Ward.
ESPN's it starts to come off as more pop than anything. You know, they would rather go with the pop story or the, you know, the story that they believe will draw more eyes than actually paying attention to the number one pick in the draft. It was a shame they did it. And listen, I understand the draft. I mean, I understand the trade came in the process, because the minute we got to talking about Cam Ward, I was like, there's a trade, like literally like 20 seconds later, there's a trade as you're starting to get into talking about Cam Ward. But obviously we got back to Cam Ward because that trade essentially for us here in Nashville didn't mean, anything other than, whoa, somebody gave up that much. Then it comes out.
Well, the
Titans
are now going to see Travis Hunter twice a year.
Absolutely.
That's not nothing.
I'm saying as far as, you know, what we're talking, what would be the lead headline for us here in Nashville, it would be Cam Ward, not the Jacksonville Jaguars draft Travis Hunter. That's underneath Cam Ward. But I just think the NFL, they did, I mean, not the NFL, ESPN, excuse me, they did themselves a disservice. I think by the way they, and this is not something, I'm not going to blame this on Shedeur Sanders. I'm not. ESPN chose to go this route. But stuff like this makes some people sort of dislike him even more, meaning Shedeur Sanders, because of the way you covered him. And even when the first guy, even when the first guy got drafted in Cam Ward, you still were so focused, even before he got drafted, minutes before he got drafted, you were focused on Shedeur Sanders when you knew he wasn't going to be the number one pick. You knew it. And then you continue to focus more on him even after Cam Ward had gotten drafted. That moment should have been all about Cam Ward. Even with the trade, it should have, they should have came back to Cam Ward. But yes, it was like they couldn't wait to talk and show Shedeur Sanders and what he was doing.
The Sanders part of it, like, it was so tone deaf of what, because ESPN, they're usually on the story. The story was, how far is he going to fall? It wasn't, hey, I think Sanders is better than Ward. That was completely off topic and forced in there, and I don't know why. It's almost like they were trying to make them feel better. But the story should have been, hey, are the Titans passing on an opportunity here to trade down? Why are they so sold on Cam Ward? That's what I wanted to know as a watcher. And then the other part was, how far is Shedeur Sanders going to fall? But there was plenty of time. They had hours to talk about that part of it. But the Titans knew and told everybody weeks ago, hey, Shedeur, we're going to pass on you. There's no reason after your pro day to follow up and have a visit because we're not going to draft you. That was a fact. That wasn't speculation.
So Shedeur Sanders falling out of the first round was the headline of the first round of the NFL draft. And I saw a lot of takes like this one from Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated. He tweeted, quote, "This is going to be painted as a slide. The reality on Shedeur Sanders is that it isn't. Most teams didn't see him as a first rounder. A lot of people didn't want to hear that. But it is what it is. Doesn't mean he can't succeed. He still can. It's going to be painted as a slide. Because he was, at the start of the college football season, I believe the betting favorite to be the number one pick in the NFL draft. Things changed quickly, but we were force-fed Shedeur Sanders, and I know that Jared is going to say he's a TV prospect, and in fairness to Jared, there is an element of that because Shedeur Sanders is, he's got the flash, he's got the famous dad, Colorado was a ratings draw, if I'm not mistaken, during the course of the college football season. It makes sense that Shedeur Sanders is the type of prospect who is most interesting to discuss on television. But I found this interesting from Steven Ruiz of The Ringer. He did a winners and losers columns of the first round. And of course, like most winners and losers columns about the first round of the NFL draft, Shedeur Sanders was in the loser category. But he wrote this. I found this to be interesting. Quote, "If Shedeur Sanders were a true day one talent, his cockiness would have been framed as swagger. If he were even a strong round two prospect, it's hard to imagine him falling past 32 teams, given how franchises covet quarterbacks on rookie deals and the fifth-year option teams get with first-rounders. The truth is, Sanders' on-field flaws should be more of a concern than any perceived deficiencies he may have as a leader. He took sacks at a concerningly high rate in college. His accuracy came and went, and he doesn't have the athletic profile we now expect every first-round prospect to carry. When looking beyond his name, the recognition that comes with being Deion's son and being the leader of one of college football's biggest draws over the past 2 years, you'll find a game that wasn't worth all this hype in the first place."
I think he was accurate. I don't think that's a good depiction of him. I thought he was an accurate quarterback. Listen. If we are to believe, which now we should, that a lot of teams just didn't see him as a first-round talent, the only reason that, you know, it's a slide is because it's Shedeur Sanders, like you said. It's not a slide because everybody was telling you that, I don't think this kid's a first-round draft pick. Whether I believed it or not or anybody else, they were saying he's not a first-round draft pick. But then when it happens, it's like now everybody want to say, oh, he slid. No, he didn't slide. He's going to eventually get drafted where teams probably had him slotted, you know, in that second, possibly even third round. Doesn't mean that he won't turn out to be a great pro. It just means that the evaluation was more accurate than what we probably, at least I wanted to believe, it was more accurate that he was a more of a day two pick out other than a day one pick. That's not sliding to me. That's just being true to the board, and he fell right where he was supposed to fall.
But you still had Mel Kiper and Booger McFarland saying that he was better than Cam Ward, who everybody knew was going first.
They may feel that way. But, again, I'm just saying, like, the teams were telling you early on, well, late enough, that he wasn't going to be a first-round draft pick. The only reason to me is because it's not that he's sliding, but that people perceived it as being a slide. He didn't slide. I think he ended up getting drafted where people thought he would get drafted, those that really know. People look at it as a slide because it's all of the hype that was built up and everything that was said about him at the beginning. And yep. Then also, you know, it's Shedeur Sanders. So the further and further he goes, it's like, oh, he slide. Look at him. Ah, ha, ha, ha. That's just what he get. When in actually, they were telling you, he's a second-round pick.
But then we should blame ESPN.
A second-day pick, yes.
We are going to join Cam Ward's introductory news conference in progress. Before we get there, the major news is that Warren Moon has handed Cam Ward his number one. So it appears that Cam Ward—
You get
Ward,
the feeling that that discussion had taken place when they held up the jersey last night and it was number one.
But let's go to Cam Ward now.
The person doesn't make the number. The player makes the number.
Cam, the legacy of quarterbacks that this organization has been a part of course, Mr. Moon, Steve McNair, and now yourself, does that put more pressure on you, or do you, you know, look at that and say, like, I need to live up to something greater than myself?
Not really. All those players, they were played for the, you know, Oilers. I'm a tight end, so none of that pressure ever gets to me. You know, I really don't care what the outside world sees me as. You know, only thing that matters to me is the building, my teammates. And so I never get too high, I never get too low. You know, I just want to go make plays.
You've been able to insert yourself in three different college programs and be the leader, be the guy all three places immediately. What's the challenge on doing it at this level, surrounded by millionaires and guys who've been in this league?
I just think just being real on time with stuff. Especially offensively, you have to be an elite communicator. I think that's what I learned, you know, being in college. I think that's why we were able to have one of the best offenses at Miami this last year. You know, we had elite communication from myself, the O-line, the receiving corps, and the running backs. And so I think that's the big part is, you know, continuing to get better each year in and out. But I think communication is a big key to us having a success.
How'd you develop that skill for being so level-headed, but not getting high, getting low, and just kind of what is the key to keeping that in the tough moments?
I would say by losing a lot in my life, and whether it's off the field, on the field, I just think the more you never change your level, you know, more good things will happen to you. And, you know, you also got to be a good teammate because at the end of the day, you know, I'll never be the only person to win us a game. I'll always be, you know, receiver catching the ball, the running back running, defense tackling. And so, you know, everybody plays a vital role, and, you know, I'm just trying to do mine each week out.
What is it about your game that you've been able to elevate your team and your teammates in the various stops that you've had, and how will that translate here?
I think I elevated those guys just by, you know, being a teammate, I would say. Being a real locker room guy and also holding people accountable. I think you can't do that unless you actually know the person, you know, on a personal level. But then it all starts on the practice field. Okay, nothing translates to the game unless you rep it over and over. But, you know, I plan on getting to work.
Did you meet any other owners during this process? And did you realize at the time how significant it was that Amy came to that workout and took some time to talk to you, get to know you and your family?
Oh, yeah, I got a chance to meet with the other team's owners as well. But I think just Miss Amy, she jumped off the charts. You know, the connection that, you know, I had with her off rip, my parents, you know, my mom getting a chance to talk with her. And then, you know, she's from my, you know, my part of the area. She's down south. And so, you know, I just think it was already, you know, made to happen.
Kim, the relationship that you developed with the receivers there in Miami, like, very quickly, how did you go about doing that? You know, because talking to, like, Restrepo, he said that you guys were on the same page immediately. You could talk without talking. How did you develop that relationship, and what did you learn as far as being able to spin it forward to here?
I would say just watching a lot of film with those guys, and then also getting reps at practice. Whether I know we're going to have bad days of practice, missed reps here and there, but, you know, you got to be able to make it up at the end of practice. But you also got to have the receivers to, you know, want to push themselves like I had in Miami. I'm surrounded by that with Tennessee. I have some elite vets, some elite young guys. And so, you know, I already get to work with those guys. But, you know, we just – it starts in the film room. You know, the football stuff on the field, take care of the rest.
You talk about that a lot, Cam, when it comes to the film room, and one of your coaches at Washington State said you're so diligent in your preparation. And it starts there. At what point, you know, did you know, like, okay, I got to be in there. I have to put in the time. And did you fall in love with the process of it too?
I've probably noticed it the most when I got to Wazoo. And it's something that you do fall in love with because I'm behind the eight ball. I did get a chance to grow up in high school, in college, you know, playing at different offices, learning football. I really didn't start learning football until I got to Wazoo. And so, you know, as I progressed throughout my career, I started to love it even more. And I just think just over time, I've gotten better. I learned how to watch film the right way. I think I have a great way of seeing space on the field, and also getting through progressions. And so I think everything's helped me, you know, to this point. I've also played with some teammates, you know, who's got a chance to play in the NFL in my past. And so I just think it all worked out.
Cam, what is it about Coach Callahan's offense that you think fits your game and your skill set conceptually?
I just think a lot of stuff translates over from what I did at Miami. Even at Wazoo and UIW, it's a real quarterback-friendly offense. You see what he did with Joe Burrow when he got him his rookie year. But, I mean, Coach Callahan is one of the best offensive minds out there, you know. And for me, it's a blessing to play for him, for somebody who I know going to believe in me, who going to put the ball in my hands at the end of the game to go win it. As a quarterback, that's all you can really live for.
What was the play you were asking him about last night?
Switch verse.
Can you kind of talk us through why you like it so much?
Verticals. We window shopping over here.
Hey, Cam, can you shed some light on your respect for Warren Moon? What do you know about his career, his journey? How do you relate to that?
I got a lot of respect. I didn't know much about him until, you know, the draft was really started since February after the last game the Titans have. Before I called him, I made sure I watched his highlights to make sure he was legit. And so he was legit, you know. You know, I'm trying to get up to his level one day. It might take me a little time, but I'll get there eventually. And so, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, and, you know, for me to be in that same number that, you know, he was in, you know, it's an honor. And, you know, I'm excited that, you know, he's here. He made time out of his way. He could have did plenty more stuff, but he made sure he was here for me, and so I'm forever grateful for it.
Cam, the fact that he went to Canada and didn't get his shot in the NFL, does that resonate with you?
A little bit, I would say. I also think it was a different time, too. The game's progressed many years. There's a lot of plays I've seen. He doing five-step drops on the center, and they run a quick game. And so that's not what we're doing nowadays from under center like that. But I just think, you know, as the game progressed, he was ahead of his time, I would say. But I'm sure he made the most of it, and he did.
Did you have any hesitation about making that phone call? Did you talk to Brian or Mike about – did they soften the path for you there?
I didn't have no hesitation making a phone call. The only thing you can say is no. And so if you said no, I'd have just got a different number. And so, you know, I wasn't really too worried about it. It don't hurt to ask.
Cam, what does the term franchise quarterback mean to you?
Somebody who can lead their teammates, you know, for a numerous amount of years, not just, you know, one season. You got to be consistent in the National Football League, and that's why you see some of the best quarterbacks out here, like Pat, Josh, and Lamar, you know, being in the playoffs every year. They're consistent quarterbacks. That's, you know, where I want to get to in my career real fast. And, you know, it's good that I can do it, you know, in a quarterback-driven system like Coach Callahan has, you know, and around a lot of good weapons.
What traits do you think you have that kind of typify what a franchise quarterback means?
I think I don't get enough credit for the type of processor that I am. I think I see space real well. Over my college career, I've gotten better at each stop and getting through progressions. And I just think I think my feel for the pocket, you know, something that can't be coached. But it's also something that you have to watch a lot of film on.
What does it mean to you that this organization has put its faith and trust in you to be the guy?
That's all I really needed. All I need is one shot. I'm going to make the most of it. And, you know, for them to draft me number one overall, you know, I know they don't regret it, and I'm going to make sure they don't.
Cam, I think I read your family hasn't missed one of your games. So what do you think it is about you and your family who will likely spend a lot of time here that fits well with Tennessee and Nashville?
They just like seeing me play football, honestly, I would say. They never missed a game my whole career from Little League, my dad coaching me all the way to this point. And, you know, it's a blessing. Not a lot of athletes can have both their parents at their games. So I'm one of the lucky ones out here. And, you know, every time, you know, I get in the stands, you know, those are really the only two people I look for. And so, you know, they at the game, I'm good. You know, I'm just trying to go win a game.
Cam, your teammates talk glowingly about your leadership. We asked you at the combine, how do you feel like your leadership style would translate to the NFL? In meeting some of your teammates that you'll be playing with, how have you started to kind of implant yourself now as we enter the next phase of your career?
Just being a good communicator, I would say. Coming in with confidence, watching film with those guys, and then also, you know, understanding them. We're going to have miscommunication, but at the end of the day, when it comes Sunday, we're going to be on the same page. And I just think, you know, the more we can mess up, you know, during the week, it's going to end up, you know, leading us to better plays on Sundays.
That was Cam Ward at his introductory news conference. The big news is that Warren Moon has given Cam Ward his blessing to wear number one. So get your Cam Ward number one jerseys now. 615-737-1025. We will react to what we heard, also about Warren Moon's decision to give Cam Ward the number one. That's coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. Derek.
Great song.
Feeling the groove here.
Tina Turner's only number one hit. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
I heard that this morning. I heard this song this morning. I didn't even request this.
What's it called when number one? The other, what was her other song, the big song?
Oh, she had a ton of great songs.
Yeah, but it
but none of them hit number one except for this one.
The first song I heard this morning was...
Are you talking globally, number one?
Not globally. Uh-huh. In the United States.
Like Billboard charts.
Oh,
Billboard,
wow.
The Billboard 100.
That was the only one that made number one?
That was the only number one hit of her whole career.
Oh, wow.
That's surprising.
That spans a long time.
Very surprising.
The first song I heard this morning was Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House.
It's a good song.
That's also a good song. I don't think that was a number one hit either. Mm. But speaking of number one, how's that for a segue?
There we go.
Speaking of number one, that's the number that Cam Ward will be wearing because the I understand that the Titans need to hold an introductory news conference for Cam Ward. He's their number one overall pick. It's a big deal to have him come to Nashville, answer questions in person. But he was asked basically all of these same questions last night. So you may have heard him say the same things. And he's been asked a lot of questions lately. We were glad to listen to some of that news conference. The most noteworthy thing, however, was that Warren Moon surprised Cam Ward by issuing him a Ward number one jersey, the number that Warren Moon wore for the Houston Oilers, which had been retired. Correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure that I am not misrepresenting that. Because, you know, sometimes teams have numbers that aren't actually retired, but they are more or less retired. A Predators example in the recent past, Phil Myers, when Phil Myers joined the Predators in the initial – was that the initial Ryan – no, that wasn't the Ryan McDonough trade. Was that the Ryan Ellis trade?
Ryan Ellis trade.
The Ryan Ellis trade. And the Predators said, Phil Myers will wear number six. And everybody freaked the F out.
Yeah.
And then he quickly changed it. Yeah. But Warren Moon has given Cam Ward his blessing to wear number one. Do we like that?
Go ahead, Willie.
Well, I think it's a classy move by Warren Moon because he could have said no, probably, and they probably asked him. Mm-hmm. It is also, I think, a simple move because it delineates the Houston Oilers from the Tennessee Titans, even though it's the same franchise. Mm-hmm. We had this discussion a few weeks ago when the discussion was, are the Titans had decided not to wear the Oilers mm-hmm. uniforms
yes.
for the coming year. I think most Nashville fans, now that the team has been here for over a generation, it's still very hard for any Titan fan to relate to the history of the franchise in Houston. But it is a deep, deep thing for the Adams family and the owners. But I think it works well because I think you could have a great bond now between the Warren Moon and a Cam Ward. So I think it works.
You know, I thought about this for a while, even before, you know, he actually presented to Jersey and the number to him, you know, when the speculation was, is he going to wear one? You know, is that a good thing? And I thought at first, I was thinking, no, that's not a good idea because it brings pressure and everything else. And what if he doesn't live up to it? Now it's, you know, the Titans you get. But the more and more I think about it is, and I said this last night, this is a resetting of a franchise. I think they are, this is Amy's franchise now. They are moving away from Houston Oilers. They are moving away from it. I think she understands that, listen, the Oilers are always going to be there. That's just the way it is. But we have to reclaim an identity. And it starts with Cam Ward. And he's going to wear the Tennessee Titans number one. I get an opportunity. My dad did it with Warren Moon and Steve McNair. This is my opportunity to do it with Cam Ward in a Tennessee Titans uniform. And this number represents the Tennessee Titans, not the Houston Oilers. And, you know, it was a nice gesture for Warren Moon to come in and take time out of his day to present, because that's big for a young guy. And that's humbling, you know, for Warren Moon, you know, that he humbled himself and said, hey, young man, the number one here, you start something new with this.
Right. I think, know? It helps so, Warren Moon exactly. connect with Titans fans, too, because I think it's always been tough for any Titans fans. But they know Warren Moon. I grew up watching Warren Moon.
Exactly.
But there's no history in Tennessee, but this helps link him,
exactly,
I think, between the two. I also wonder, with Cam Ward being from Houston, Cam Ward is much too young to have remembered Warren Moon playing, but I wonder about his dad. I don't know if his dad or his mom or both grew up in the Houston area, but it's very possible that Cam's dad grew up watching Warren Moon for Houston. If that's them, I don't know. But again, it's a good link and a bond. I think it's good that Warren Moon's like, yeah, I want to feel connected to this franchise. I'm a link to the past, and I've got this kid's back. That's good.
One texter says, how are we supposed to defend the organization when Houston natives say the Oilers jerseys belong to the Texans?
Right, that's a whole other thing. That's what we were discussing just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it doesn't belong to the Texans. No way, no how.
With
the NFL told them.
With the Titan blue or whatever.
Yeah, the NFL told them, it does not belong to you. So I don't know why they keep arguing it, but, you know, or bringing it up, and it becomes this debate when it shouldn't be a debate. I just think it's, you know, it's a resetting of a franchise. I think she feels this is the guy, and we're going to give him this number, and it signifies or tells everyone that this organization has reset, and we believe he is our guy. He's going to wear the number one. And when you think of number ones now, in her mind, she wants people to get used to seeing Cam Ward in the number one and not think about the great Warren Moon, who used to wear that number.
Wes and Hermitage on our text line said, there's absolutely no reason why Ward couldn't wear 11. I don't like this move. They wouldn't even ask about number 9, and they shouldn't. Moon was better than McNair, so this is really not a question to me. I like Ward a lot, though, and I hope the best for him. This jersey thing is not the right move, and I hope people don't take this as Ward being entitled.
Again, it's you can't give him 9. One, he didn't wear 9 in college, but you can't give him 9 because people really...
That's
they have a connection
yes,
with
that
nine.
That happened in Nashville. That happened in Nashville. Connection.
That's sort of the Shea Weber wearing number 6 thing. That was what I was talking about.
Yeah,
before.
So it's like that
or
connection.
Phil Myers wearing number 6.
So you cannot give anyone number 9. You just can't do it. Number 1, yes, you can. Because the majority of Titan fans now, there's a big group of them now and moving forward, it's going to be even more that don't know what Warren Moon or didn't know what Warren Moon career consists of. They never saw him play. They never probably looked at the numbers. They just, he was an old Houston Oiler. Yeah. But there was nothing that connected them to Warren Moon. There's something that can connect them with Cam Ward. There's something that connected them with Steve McNair. That's why you can't give him a number 9. That's why it's easier to give him a number one, because now there's a distinct separation of franchises.
Warren Moon, according to Paul Kaharsky, he just tweeted this a couple of minutes ago. That's not the first time I've been called for that number. Wasn't easy. I was a Houston Oiler. He's playing in the Tennessee Titans jersey. That, according to Warren Moon via Paul Kaharsky.
Again, and is he saying that's why, that's one of the reasons why he chose to give up the number one? Because it's a Tennessee Titan jersey and not a Houston Oiler jersey?
It gets into a broad discussion, too, about how many players should a franchise retire their numbers, mm-hmm. right? You have to be – it's a very big decision, mm-hmm. even though maybe in the moment you're like, yeah, retire this guy's number. Yeah, let's retire that guy's number. Yeah, he
but
was good, too.
So many numbers.
But you right, well, the hockey teams, you go to Montreal. There's not a lot of numbers left for the Canadiens.
No, there's not.
Right? And that's it. There's a lot of current players wearing numbers in the 60s and the 70s. Yankees like that, too. So you have to be very careful on whose number you're going to retire, because it's a special thing.
615-737-1025. We'll take any and all thoughts on Cam Ward, number one overall pick, number one for your Tennessee Titans after Warren Moon bestowed upon him his number one. 615-737-1025. We'll end the week by taking it to the bank. We're all going to answer one question. We're all going to make our predictions. Then we will bring in Jared Stillman. He's had some time to relax. We'll see how he's doing after last night's draft night meltdown. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game. D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, Derek Mason had to step out a little bit early, and that's okay. We are quickly going to take it to the bank, presented by F&M Bank. Banking made easy on purpose. We'll also bring in Jared Stillman as well. So quickly, here's what we're all going to do. And Jared, if you want to get in on this, you absolutely can. We're all going to predict the specific pick in which Shedeur Sanders will be drafted, we assume, tonight. So we're all going to go around. I have Derek's selection. I will make his as well. We'll start with Willie. Where does Shedeur Sanders, the specific number, where does Shedeur Sanders get drafted tonight?
I think he will be the first pick in the round, but it will not be to the Browns. I think the Browns, who dictate this whole thing with the two picks they have, will wheel and deal out of that spot. It also is my sense that, remember when Deion was floating around months ago, that there's certain franchises my son won't play for, I'm going to tell them not to pick him, that the Browns might have been on that list, which is what leans me towards that pick. Can't prove it, but that's my theory.
So he's going 33 overall, but not to the Browns.
Yep.
Derek and I both say that he will go to the Browns with the second of their second round pick, so number 36. So he will go to the Browns, but not at 33. He'll go at 36. David, what about you?
I think he'll go eighth to the Saints at the 40th pick.
Okay. Jared?
I'm with Willie. I think he goes with the 33rd pick. I think he's the first quarterback off the board. I think he's the first player off the board today. I don't know if it's the Browns or not the Browns. You know, David brings up the Saints. The Saints have told everyone they don't like Sanders, so maybe that means they do like Sanders, but I guess they like the tackle or the guard or whatever. But I think he's the first quarterback. I think he's the first player off the board.
So, Jared, we were playing Cam Ward's introductory news conference, and I can't repeat exactly what you said on my personal text line, but you referred to it as a quote-unquote arrogant press conference. Please explain.
I was a little disappointed. I'm not going to lie. I was listening to the Cam Ward press conference. Everything I've heard from Cam Ward, I have loved so far as, like, he seems like a genuine dude, and I listen to his teammates in college talk about him and his coaches, and they all say great things about him, and, you know, he's honest when he does interviews, or it feels honest, it feels genuine when he does these interviews, but you can see a little confidence, a little chip on the shoulder. And then I was listening to this press conference, and I thought I was listening to Shedeur Sanders' press conference. I didn't know if it was Deion Sanders and Shedeur Sanders mixed into one with Cam Ward. Sitting there up there with Warren Moon talking about, well, I'll get on his level. Dude, this is the NFL, man. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Like, that's hard. Like, let's start with getting through OTAs on the first day. And if we can do that, then let's work on doing the second day. I got to say, I'm a Cam Ward fan because I'm a Titan fan. I heard you guys talking about that earlier today. So I hope Cam Ward does well. I told my son today, I was like, you know what? I hope that you become a huge Cam Ward fan. Because a buddy of mine, Jason Anderson, I worked with in Louisville. He does the midday show in Kansas City. He's from Kansas City. And his son was born right around like the same period in life that my son was born. And his son is the biggest Mahomes fan there ever was because he's like 7 years old. And so all he knows is Mahomes. And I hope that's the case with my son. I really do. But at the same time, I'm like, man, like, I remember the hype for Vince Young. I remember the hype for Mariota. I mean, this time last year, people were saying that Will Levis was a franchise quarterback, and now he might not even be worth a pizza over here at Boombas. He stinks so bad. Not that the pizza here is not that expensive, but, I mean, we're talking about a franchise quarterback. The pizza here is fabulous. But it just is crazy. I mean, again, I think people are getting a little carried away here. Let's get through the first day before we anoint him, again, as they're putting it, Air, H-E-I-R, McNair.
So Willie was getting a lot of text, or we were getting a lot of text, that Willie was doing his best Jared impression earlier in the show. You even texted me, God bless Willie Donick for how he reacted to the Titans reportedly returning down a trade from the New York Giants that included their first round pick this and next year, along with other picks. You said on the draft show last night, I'm glad we had, I would call it a mini meltdown. It wasn't your biggest meltdown, but we needed a meltdown, so we got a little bit of a meltdown. You said Cam Ward better end up being Patrick Mahomes to justify not dealing the number one pick. Can you expand on that?
Well, didn't we think that the reason that the Giants had called and the Giants had offered, and you know, we probably knew it was more than just a third-round pick, which Adam Schefter had said earlier in the week, but didn't we kind of feel like, yeah, this quarterback class, this draft class, it's not a special quarterback class. It's not a special draft class. Ward is the best of a bad group. He would have been right there neck and neck with Bo Nix for the 12th pick last year if this Cam Ward was in last year's draft. So the Giants probably don't think he's a super, super guy, so they're not trying to move heaven and earth in order to get him. So there wasn't a big offer there. And then Adam Schefter comes on TV and says they offered two ones and the 34th pick. And it's like, wait a minute, what? They turned down one of these granddaddy offers? And then when we see Jacksonville pays a granddaddy offer to get Travis Hunter, which I thought was stupid. But when I see that, I'm like, wait a minute, what? Like, they were willing to do, goodness gracious. I mean, the Giants, the desperate Giants, were willing to do that? Well, I guess, you know, like Brian Callahan said yesterday, there's no price for franchise quarterbacks. And I think, like, Derek has a different interpretation of what a franchise quarterback is than I do. I mean, because Derek says, you know, franchise quarterbacks don't have to be elite. So Carson Palmer with the Bengals was a franchise quarterback, or Kyler Murray with Arizona is a franchise quarterback. And I'd rather have the extra picks than have Kyler Murray and what he's given Arizona. So I think he's got to be an elite quarterback. He's got to be in that class when all is said and done with Mahomes and Allen and Burrow and Jackson. And I think that they have, the way that they've treated this by not entertaining offers and by picking him and by giving him Warren Moon's jersey, I mean, I think the expectation is that he's going to be an elite quarterback. And I think anything other than that would be incredibly disappointing to me.
Well, Jared, I think you and I had the same philosophy that when you have the first pick, you have leverage that no other franchise has. And so, in my mind, I'm like you. I was under the impression that this particular year, nobody was really biting and giving you what you might be looking for to trade out of that pick. The instant that I heard what Jacksonville was offering for the number two pick, that's when I lost my mind last night. And I continued with that this morning on the first hour of our show. I cannot believe they would turn down that. And then it comes out minutes later that the Giants offered their first round pick next year. That's all I needed to hear. I don't even care what else was in there, the swapping of this round or that round, adding this round or that round. I could not get off of this fact. The Giants' first pick in the draft next year, their first round pick, that could be a top five pick. The value of that is enormous, off the charts. Jared, I know that you like to get the chart out and the points and the things like that. I'm not into that. I'm into maximizing the leverage of the first pick. To put all of your eggs in Cam Ward's basket, as much as you might love him, it's not worth turning down a deal like that, in my opinion.
So I would not just say, the thing you said was as much as you love him. I mean, if I thought somebody like Caleb Williams last year, and I didn't like Caleb Williams because I didn't like his personality, but Caleb Williams, in terms of talent, I mean, he was up there.
You didn't like his purse, if I recall correctly.
I did not like his purse, and I did not like, I think what I found is to be pretty immature, some of the way that he carried himself. But that kind of quarterback, Trevor Lawrence coming out, Joe Burrow coming out, Andrew Luck coming out, I mean, there is not, in my opinion, a price you can pay when there is that generational quarterback that seems to be there. But I'm not convinced by watching the film or anything I've heard or seen or anything anybody's told me about. There's nothing that's made me think that Cam Ward is a generational player. And that's when generational potential player, then we're not going to have a conversation. But I'm not convinced Cam Ward's that. I went to the Super Bowl and had all those people on my show, whether it's former general managers or draft gurus or whatever, and not one of those people said, yeah, you know, Cam Ward, he really profiles to be Andrew Luck. Not one person said that. In fact, the sentiment at the Super Bowl was, this is a horrible quarterback class. Then, without taking a single meaningful snap, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, no, you could have offered us Mahomes, Allen, and Burrow in a trade, and we still would have said no because Cam Ward's that good. I have a hard time with that. I feel like this is going to be very reminiscent of Mariota. The Titans drafted the left tackle in 2014 in the first round, and then the next year they drafted Mariota in the first round, and they were awful, and then they traded the pick for a huge haul. I feel like this may be going down a similar path because I'm worried that with just the 35th pick, I'm not exactly sure how they build a team around Cam Ward to be successful. But they say they have a plan. I don't know what it is other than what everybody else, the stupid teams would do, is throw them out there. But, hey, you know, this is apparently the Titans have answers. They always have answers. They're always right. And then the fall comes around, and they're not as right.
But they chose not even to play the poker game to try to maybe convince people they were going to take Travis Hunter with the first pick and get the Jags to jump up for the first pick. And then you move down and you move back up. You may, if you've played the poker game, could have played it and still gotten Cam Ward. If you're that convinced that Cam Ward is the right guy, they could have done that.
I think that's a dangerous game to play if you're convinced that he's a superstar. And you have to be willing to lose,
just like in a poker game. You might have to decide, we played the game, we wanted Ward, we didn't get Ward. Life will go on, right? Because like you said, Jarrett, he's not considered that high of a prospect. So next year you're going to be right back in this boat, but you would have way more draft capital in your pocket.
So Willie, I agree with you, again, on the sentiment of hearing about the first rounder next year. I thought if the Giants offered 34 their first rounder next year, I would have made the trade. But that's the kind of the same trade that the Baltimore Colts made with John Elway that Ernie Accorsi resigned over because he was like, that's not enough. If they think he's John Elway, then that's not enough. I just don't know who thinks he's John Elway.
Jared, are you part of the draft coverage tonight?
I am not. I will be here until 6 o'clock, and then Chase and Joe Rexroad will take over, and we're very excited for the draft show here at Boombox.
Absolutely.
Jared, real quick, did you see the scores last night in the NHL playoffs?
I did not. I did not pay attention to any playoffs, but I woke up this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, and Joe made sure to bring that up because he lost the argument of whether or not Shedeur Sanders was a real prospect or a TV prospect.
Yep. The Wild beat the Vegas Golden Knights, blew them out easily, 5-2, 2-1, Heinze. Just letting you know. I'll keep you updated on that.
Maybe you should say it was a mistake for the Predators to fire him. I'm kidding.
I've always been a Heinze fan. You have always been an A-sayer about him.
He's a good coach. That'll do it for us today. You can catch Jared at Boombas in East Nashville for Stillman & Company, followed by the Draft Show with Chase McCabe and Joe Rexroad. On behalf of Derek, be loved, love on your people. Have a wonderful weekend. Peace.